the national news.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Happy Friday and welcome to the April 2nd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Two of the most popular annual sporting events here in the United States, the men's and women's U.S. college basketball championship tournaments, have reached the Final Four stage. Joining us now with a preview is Dan Friedel. Sporty greetings, Dan.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The college basketball tournament, men's and women's Final Fours, are set for this weekend. The men are in Indianapolis, Indiana, and the women are in San Antonio, Texas. On Saturday night in Indianapolis, there is a Texas tussle between Waco's Baylor University and the University of Houston. That's the alma mater of Nigeria's Akeem Olajuwon. That's the opener, and it'll be followed by a West Coast matchup of the storied UCLA Bruins and this year's number one team, the Gonzaga Bulldogs. Gonzaga has not lost in 30 games. The women's tournament semifinals are on Friday night and include three historically strong teams, Stanford facing South Carolina and the University of Connecticut facing Arizona. Connecticut is led by Paige Beckers. Just in her first year at the school, she was recently named the College Player of the Year.
I'm just extremely grateful and blessed to be in this position. All glory to God and my teammates and my coaches and those that have made me the person I am on and off the court today. And this is just something I dreamt of doing as a kid. I mean, you can't even really dream of it because it seems so surreal and it seems so impossible. But I know with God and on my side, anything is possible. And through him, I can do anything that I can put my mind to. And so I'm just super extremely grateful to be in this position. And I thank everybody involved.
Sonny, while the games have been exciting, I wanted to know how important they've been for people looking for normalcy after over a year of the COVID-19 pandemic. I talked with Chuck Culpepper of the Washington Post, who's been covering the games in Indianapolis.
I feel like what these games have provided more than anything else is a crucial distraction. And I think that might be bigger than the element of some kind of return to normal as we once knew it. I think they've actually helped people think about something else and get an escape from all the mortality that's been around us and the thoughts about mortality, the constant thinking about mortality. When I think about this, I think about Mike Yassa, a neuroscientist at UC Irvine. He was quoted in The Atlantic a few weeks ago saying that we're all walking around with a bit of mild cognitive impairment. And that one of the reasons, as he went on, he was saying, is that our brains have lacked novelty during this time. And that novelty is a crucial element of, you know, fostering a healthy brain.
That's Chuck Culpepper of the Washington Post here on the Sunny Side of Sports. I wondered, how does it feel for just a few hours each day to be focused on the games? Chuck offered a two-part answer. He said he feels sad there are not many fans and some of the excitement is missing. He vowed not to complain about the traffic going or coming from a game ever again. But he also said there is something special about being at these games.
The fact is, when I go to a game for 2 hours and I sit there and I get absorbed in it, and I get the privilege of writing about it, then I do feel something that feels very much like life. And that's what I've needed to feel during the past year. That's what we've all been bereft of to some degree. I can't wait to hug people again, but I love the idea that I get to see them play basketball again. It has meant something.
Sonny, I told Chuck about our international audience, and I asked him if he has ever been able to explain the phenomenon of Americans getting so wrapped up in games played by college students. He started off by saying, it is hard to tell people about how millions of people around the U.S. build the games into their lives, but it has been a tradition for decades.
If you add it all up, it does seem like one of the most bizarre developments in human cultural history until you walk into the middle of it and feel the energy of it. And I think that has been irresistible to Americans for generation upon generation upon generation. And it's reached the point where, of course, people weigh the big time sports and the atmosphere around it as one of the ways they choose a university, one of the elements on their list of reasons they might choose a place. To have March Madness return is to kind of feel that energy from all over the country in the pockets that are following it near and far, and to know in this instance that it has never been more meaningful than it is at this point in human history.
That's Chuck Culpepper of the Washington Post. He's reporting on the men's college basketball tournament from Indianapolis, Indiana. And I'm Dan Friedel for the Sunny Side of Sports.
Thanks, Dan. Now let's go to Southern Africa, and we'll make a stop in Malawi. That's where President Lazarus Chakwera has honored the country's national football team, nicknamed the Flames, for officially booking their ticket to next year's Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Cameroon. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
Malawi qualified for Africa Cup of Nations finals Monday after beating Uganda 1-0 at Kamuzu Stadium in Malawi's commercial capital, Blantyre. The win put Malawi on second position in Group B behind Burkina Faso. In his address to players, President Chakwera said the national soccer team has done the nation proud, saying this shows that success comes to those who work hard.
It's not the dog in the fight. It's the fight in the dog. You have a little faith in your own Flames.
Malawi last qualified for the Africa Cup of Nations in 2010. Chakwera, however, said while the nation is celebrating, the team should aim higher and fight for honors in Cameroon.
It's not enough just to participate, just to win, just to score goals or win some games. That has happened before. Let's aim for something that's never happened.
President Chakwera also said his government will consider a request from John Banda, the captain of Malawi national football team, who asked government to improve welfare of players, like providing them with good houses or allocate them land to build their own houses. Walter Nyamilandu is president of the Football Association of Malawi, or FAM. Nyamilandu said Malawi has been failing to succeed in international competitions because of lack of adequate preparation due to financial problems. He asked government to consider increasing budget allocation to the football for better results.
Today, we're talking about qualifying for the Africa Cup of Nations. Our desire at FAM is to build on this momentum and make our participation at the Africa Cup of Nations a routine. We should not wait for another decade to qualify.
Sunduzwayo Madise is the board chairperson of the Malawi National Council of Sports. He assured to look into the needs of Malawi National Football Team.
On our part, Your Excellency, we shall liaise with the Football Association of Malawi, as well as the Ministry of Youth Sports, to ensure that we prepare the Flames. I'm sure these players want to come back and show you the trophy.
Malawi is also expected to play in the World Cup qualifiers starting June in the same group with Ivory Coast, Mozambique, and Cameroon. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Lamek Masina in Blantyre, Malawi.
Thanks, Lamek. Two African football teams, Gambia and Comoros, will be making their debut at the 2022 Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Cameroon. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye called Johannesburg, where he reached African football analyst Emeka Enyadike.
I think the qualification of the Gambia and especially for me, the Comoros, is really amazing, because what this says is just that the development of football on the African continent is without boundaries right now. There's no scenario where you see any country in Africa as a minor. Remember Madagascar beating Nigeria at the last AFCON. One thing we have seen with this team, just the passion and the commitment of the players in Africa to be not just in AFCON, but also be at the World Cup. So this is a big moment for both countries, because Gambia, you know, coming from West Africa, have underperformed through the years. And the Comoros, in a tiny island nation, but, you know, they have a lot of potential.
In the last AFCON finals held in Egypt, some countries made their debut appearance. What's the implication for African football?
I think it's, you know, we've seen this scenario where over the last 10 years, there's been some kind of emergence of new countries at the AFCON. And I won't be surprised if along the line, you know, countries like South Sudan suddenly start pulling their weight, because, you know, the difference in terms of development of the African countries have been mostly driven by the rivalry that exists, and then the fact that you are beginning to see more and more players from just about every country on the continent finding their way to Europe. So this has strengthened a lot of the teams, and some of them are finding players who can claim some ancestry that one of their parents or their grandparents were born in this country. So it's a good development, because what it would do, or what the implication is that more and more players, more and more young people in all those countries will believe that they too can make it. So for AFCON, it's can only get better when you have more and more of these countries, because it popularize the game and the tournament.
Do you think the new entrants in the AFCON finals will make big impact or shock the big names?
Will they do well at the tournament or cause upsets? It's quite possible. We've seen it with Guinea-Bissau. We've seen it with, I think it was Cape Verde in 2013, AFCON 2013, when they held South Africa to a dignity draw in the opening game. A few months earlier, when President Zuma from South Africa did the draws and picked out those South Africa versus Cape Verde, everyone was saying it would be a walkover for South Africa. But we saw, I was at that game, it was amazing performance by Cape Verde, and they also extended that to the World Cup qualifiers. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do well, especially Comoros, and I'm looking forward to it, and I hope that we do get a surprise. Inexperience might come in much later in the tournament, but I'm definitely hoping for some good results from either of them or Gambia.
That's African football analyst Emeka Enyadike. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Hi, my name is Emeka Enyadike from the City of Gold, Johannesburg. I want to say a big shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week, right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Sporty greetings. This is Chairman Christian Chukwu, former captain of national team Green Eagles, former coach of Super Eagles, former coach of Kenya national team, former coach of Safa of Lebanon. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Samson Omale joins us now with more Africa Cup of Nations football news. Sporty Good Friday greetings, Samson.
Sporty Good Friday greetings to you, Sonny. We begin with the announcement by the Confederation of African Football that the African Cup of Nations tournament will be staged in Cameroon from January the 9th to February the 6th next year. A virtual executive committee meeting chaired by the recently elected president, Patrice Motsepe from South Africa, also decided that a draw to divide the 24 qualifiers into six groups will be held on June the 25th. Earlier this week, the final round of qualifying matches were played to determine the 24 teams that will be in Cameroon for the continent's football showpiece. I sat down with football analyst Jerry Udo and Ferdinand Ubum to review the qualifiers.
Right now, we have 23 countries who have booked their places, less but one, which is going to be either Sierra Leone or Benin Republic. Now, let's look at the configuration of the teams that qualify. What would this mean for other African countries now that we have more countries participating?
It has benefited some teams already from this particular qualifying series. Some teams have made it for the first time. The Comoro Islands, which is a French island country in the southern part of the continent, many claim that they brought players from France, from the lower divisions in France, because they are closer to France. And many are saying that they should check the origin of these players, because most of them may not really be from the Comoro Islands. We also have Gambia from West Africa qualifying for their first Nations Cup. I think Guinea-Bissau also are making their debut in the competition. It tells you that the expanded form of the Nations Cup is a blessing in disguise, because it has now given smaller teams that hitherto wouldn't have gotten the opportunity of qualifying to make it to their first African Cup of Nations. So the expanded version of the Nations Cup is a welcome idea and is a good one.
Now, Ferdinand, what we've seen is more the dominance of West African countries in these qualifiers. You compare it to club football, where obviously you have the Northern African teams. It appears the West African countries appears to take a huge number of those going to Cameroon in 2022.
Yeah, the truth remains that West African footballers are naturally gifted, even right from cradle. If you look at all the numbers, you know, from time immemorial, you discover that you have more natural talents here than in the northern parts of Africa. And another factor is the fact that we have players who ply their trades in Europe, a lot of them. While a lot of North African players, because their leagues are already good and well organized, because they have better pay, most of them prefer to play at home. You know, so I think that European exposure also helped the West African teams, you know, to gain more stability, you know, and to have more confidence in North Africans.
Algeria are proving that they are still the champions of the continent. They are the highest scoring team in the qualifiers. I think they are followed by Morocco and then Tunisia. The North Africans have shown their dominance in terms of scoring goals, that technically they are better off than the sub-Saharan African nations. So it tells you that the North Africans are still up there with a class. But it's a good thing that it's a blend of the old brigade and the new ones going to this particular Cup of Nations.
Another reason, again, looking at the advantage, marketing advantage for particularly the new teams that are coming into the Nations Cup for the first time, at least they will have greater opportunity for their players to be seen, you know, by big European clubs and other African teams too that are more organized. Will have an opportunity to see better talent from the smaller teams, and these players will have an opportunity to be picked and play for the bigger leagues across the bigger nations in Africa who have better organized leagues, and also in Europe.
Now, Jerry, you look at the teams that didn't qualify, the likes of Uganda, Tanzania, Kenya from East Africa. You go to South Africa, you have Zambia, Lesotho, and all of that. What do you make of these?
Ethiopia appears to be the only team from the eastern part of the continent that qualified for this year's Nations Cup. It tells you that East African football has refused to grow over the years. We expect the East Africans to have done better than this. But like you said, the West Africans have shown dominance. It shows that the talents in the western coast of the continent are more like we've seen from this particular nation. So the East Africans will have to really step up their ante and improve their leagues, because the leagues are not really improved. Though the Kenyan league is not a bad league, but the Kenyans have always huffed and puffed. Today they are there, tomorrow they are not there. So it's a message to the East Africans, the Sikafa region of the continent, that they have to improve their games. And they have a sub-regional tournament, which even West Africa is not even as consistent as then.
Well, I was really shocked to find out that South Africa wouldn't be going to the Nations Cup. I knew that their coach, that is Molefe Nseki, was going to be in trouble. He has been sacked. It's not a good thing that South Africa did not qualify and Sudan had to qualify ahead of them. But I think if they put their heads together, maybe they could do well at the World Cup qualifiers. But they must have a manager now.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Now, controversy is still trailing the last fixture in the AFCON qualifying series between Sierra Leone and Benin Republic. The CAF Organizing Committee for the African Cup of Nations has decided to postpone the AFCON 2021 qualification match to the next FIFA international window in June 2021. The match was abandoned after Benin protested the results of a medical examination which named five of their squad members as positive for COVID-19. The controversy has since left the final place at next year's African Cup undecided on the last day of qualifying. Sierra Leone needed to win at home to reach the tournament for the first time in 25 years, while the visitors only needed a draw. Staying with the fallout from the African Cup of Nations qualifying rounds, Mozambique national football coach Luis Goncalves has been fired. He became the second coach to lose his job this week following the conclusion of the African Cup of Nations qualifying. South Africa coach Molefe Nseki was the first to be shown the exit door after failing to reach the finals. A Mozambique National Football Federation statement confirmed the Maputo-born handler had been sacked after the Mambas lost 1-0 at home to Cape Verde and finished last in a group including Cameroon and Rwanda. Staying with football news, former Black Stars goalkeeper Richard Kingston is aiming to become the next Barcelona of Spain football coach once the opportunity presents itself. He's comparing the Black Stars of Ghana to a second or third division club side in Europe when asked if he can prove anything different if given the opportunity to coach Ghana's national football team.
Even coaching Black Stars itself is something like coaching second division or third division. I want to coach Barcelona because I know I have what it takes to do it. So coaching Blasters is not like something extraordinary. Yeah, it's just you take a pen and paper and write yourself, myself. So it's just something common for me to do it.
And out to Kenya, where the Football Kenya Federation is optimistic that the Premier League will resume following consultations with the Ministry of Sports that include having the top flight players receive the COVID-19 vaccine. FKF President Nick Mwemwa says discussion so far on the matter has been largely positive.
She is keen that if we can implement some things, because we've been playing without fans, as you know, we continue like that. And she is keen that we come back quickly. She is keen that we vaccinate all our players.
Despite missing out on a chance to qualify for back-to-back African Cup of Nations, Harambee Stars of Kenya are steadfast on their dream of making it to the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. The Harambee Stars now shift their focus to the World Cup qualifiers in June. Kenya is in Group E alongside Uganda, Rwanda and Mali. Jacob Ghost Muli is the Harambee Stars coach.
It's a big dream. Being in the World Cup 2022 would be my biggest desire. And for the fact that Olunga is also playing in Qatar, that would be a very good thing. They are difficult matches, but not impossible. And I think with the good preparation that we are planning, I think we can be able to just pull a slot in that.
Away from football news now, the Basketball African League will tip off in Kigali, Rwanda in May, a year after being postponed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The new league involves 12 teams from the continent and is a partnership between the Federation of International Basketball Association and the NBA. Former NBA executive and Basketball African League president Amadou Gallo-Fall explains that it is a unique opportunity to grow the sport.
The most important thing was to identify a place where we felt all the conditions were there in terms of safety and really, you know, how the pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic have been managed. And this is why we choose to play in Kigali, single site where we're going to bring all the 12 teams. This is the first time that the NBA is collaborating to launch a professional basketball league outside of North America, and Africa is the territory that was chosen, and it speaks volume about the potential that we see here for basketball development. So I think first look to create interest, shine a spotlight on the sport, and grow the fan base. And yes, 1.2 billion people in Africa, and combined that with the incredible athletic talent that exists here. So we saw a unique opportunity to grow our sport.
The Fencing Junior and Cadet World Championships 2021 is set to begin this Saturday in Egypt. Cairo became the first African host of the World Fencing Championships in 1949, but the event has not been staged on the continent since then. 15-year-old Reni Nasozi Kigundu of Uganda will be the sole representative of the country at the championships. Reni won Uganda's only medal, a silver, at the African Fencing Championships last year. Reni says she had limited time for preparation, but she's optimistic of giving a good account of herself at the championship.
Well, there's been a lot of work that has been put in equally by me, my coaches, my family, my manager here. We've all worked very hard together to make sure I can reach this point and proudly represent Uganda in this competition. I think maybe the time has been slightly limited. However, I know that we have used the limited time we've had very wisely, and that we've done all that we can to make sure I'm ready for this competition.
It's back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Samson. That's Samson Omale with another extra spicy African sports package. Thursday marked opening day in Major League Baseball. The league's most successful team, the New York Yankees, welcome fans back to their ballpark for the first time in about a year and a half because of the COVID-19 pandemic. VOA's Gwen Uten tells us more. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. On Thursday, about 10,000 spectators were in attendance to watch the Toronto Blue Jays beat the New York Yankees 3-2. But despite the loss and the rainy weather, fans like Jason Rivera, Julie Rosen, and Clint Bingham said they were excited to return to Yankee Stadium to watch a game live and in person.
We are ecstatic. We're so glad to be back. Ready to brave the elements. Regardless, we were coming no matter what. Rain, sleet, snow, wind, whatever. Looking forward to get back in the stadium and seeing our Yankees, man.
I'm so excited. I'm actually in a teaching master's program, and one of the things I promised myself if I got in was to go to a Yankees game. And what better day than opening day? It's a little rainy, it's a little cloudy, but go Yankees. I'm excited to be here.
It's exciting. Haven't had baseball in person in a while. It's good to be back.
In fact, the last time fans were allowed inside the ballpark was in October 2019. On Thursday, Yankee Stadium opened to 20% capacity, and those in attendance were required to wear face masks and show either a negative test for COVID-19 or proof that they were fully vaccinated. And with a temperature check as an additional precaution, Jason Rivera and Julie Rosen said the safety measures went a long way in making them feel safe.
We're glad to see that, you know, numbers are way down now, and between the vaccinations and people having it and herd immunity, and we're not concerned.
Okay.
You know, so we're ready to go.
We all get tested. I get tested. I'm half vaccinated, so hopefully that will help me at least a little bit. But sounds like MLB did what they could, so. Should be a good day.
However, about 200 miles south of New York, it wasn't such a good day for baseball fans who hope to celebrate opening day at Nationals Park here in Washington, D.C. Thursday's matchup between the Washington Nationals and the New York Mets was postponed hours before the first pitch because of coronavirus concerns. Earlier this week, 5 members of the Nationals team had to quarantine after one player tested positive. And by the time Thursday's game was postponed, 3 players had tested positive, with a 4th likely to have also contracted the virus. In an official Twitter statement, the Washington Nationals said, as contact tracing continues among members of the organization, the game would not be played on Friday out of an abundance of caution. However, Washington fans eager to celebrate opening day hope their home team will be cleared on Saturday to face the New York Mets at Nationals Park. Fingers crossed. And that is all from me, Sonny. I'll hand it back over to you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. And you have a good weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. Gwen mentioned Washington fans eager to celebrate opening day. Well, Washington fans certainly had a lot to celebrate a couple of years ago when the Nationals won their first World Series title. There were celebrations here in Washington, including a big parade right outside our Voice of America headquarters. And that wraps up the April 2nd edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in and have a nice weekend. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.